The home of jump racing. This is where the magic happens. Feel like a Cheltenham favourite with Paddy Power.
Welcome everybody to Road to Cheltenham, and Ruby, what a race we have to reflect on from the weekend. The SBK Clarence House, the clash we'd been longing for until they actually turned up in the paddock. I don't think we dared believe it was actually going to happen, but Shishkin and Anegamen took each other on, and there was the small matter of the title holder first flow in the race as well at Ascot.
Yeah, there was the small matter of the title holder as well, first flow. But look, it was a brilliant race to watch. I think when you've got a foot in either camp, and I have one in the Willie Mullins camp, you're hard to probably call it a great race when you lose. And that's purely out of the disappointment of that, I suppose. But it was a brilliant race to watch, and it was run very evenly. It was a strong race, and ultimately the best horse won.
Yes, we're going to unpick it in lots of detail in a moment and think about future scenarios. For me, it was one of the best races I've seen for years, I think.
It was a really good race, yeah.
Just the tactical element of it and how it was panning out, I just thought was extraordinarily good. And it was one of those races where you just could not sit down and watch it. You had to be on your feet and moving around. And I was kind of pacing before the race and pacing after the race. It was just incredible.
Yeah, and look, you often hear Aidan O'Brien, I suppose, referring to it when they run pacemakers about creating a strong race that is even and allows the best horse to win. And with the pace that Energamine went, that's exactly what you got on Saturday. I don't think if Paul Townend had a stopwatch on him, he could have ridden more even splits. He got it absolutely right. And when the pressure was applied, especially away from Swindley Bottom, like they clocked under 15 just twice, rising away from there. It put first flow to the pin of his collar. They quickened sharply from the home turn to two out. Now, Energamine did slow from the second last to the last and again from the last to the line. But the fractions I was clocking, who's to say Shishkin didn't slow as well? He just didn't slow as much. But it was a really good race. Jumping-wise, I thought maybe Energamine held the ace there. Obviously, Shishkin pecked at the third fence down the hill, and that could have been costly, but he came back on the bridle. I thought Energamin didn't miss a beat jumping, got a brilliant jump at the last and probably pinched himself the best part of a length there, but he still couldn't repel Shishkin.
For me, this was Energamin's best chance of beating Shishkin. I thought the track would particularly favour Energamin. Shishkin, with his habit of adjusting left, that Ascot might exaggerate that a little bit. I think that was the case. I mean, as you say, it was a good even pace. I can't believe it was the pace that was putting Shishkin under pressure. I mean, I know he's not the silkiest traveller in the world, but nonetheless, I felt that at each fence, it was kind of the adjusting left and then having to click back in to being in the position behind Energamin with Paul Townend completely controlling things on the inside.
Yeah, but there was a couple of times that Paul set Energamine alight, the last ditch and the last fence in particular were the obvious ones to the eye. Energamine has that scope to stand way back that you would expect or you see two-milers often doing. Shishkin doesn't do that. He never comes a stride too early or half a stride early. If he's in, his preference is to take the shorter stride. And I suppose that's where those half lengths add up a little bit. So, Energamine is the more flamboyant jumper, I think is the word I'm looking for.
He's really fluid and quick and silky there. Let's just reflect on coulda, woulda, shoulda at Ascot before we sort of project forward. Some people have argued that it would have been better had Energamine gone a bit harder, maybe in the third quarter. What would be your take on that, bearing in mind how the horse slowed down towards the end?
The third quarter would be sort of from halfway from Swindley Bottom to the home turn, I would imagine, would be the third quarter. Me picturing Ascot, I would personally think that's definitely the wrong place to go harder. You're still climbing at that stage in Ascot. And to me, that's a cardinal sin to go faster when you're going uphill. That's the quickest way of sapping energy. So maybe not there. You could maybe have rolled more with the undulation in the second quarter down the hill. And saw if you could have tested Shishkin's jumping. But when you do that, you're also testing your own jumping. So there has to be a risk assessment there. But I thought, looking at the diffractions and watching them even live on television on the day, it looked very even. It looked very solid to me. To me, you couldn't do it any better.
I agree. I mean, to be fair, I was possibly misrepresenting other people's arguments there, and an argument I don't really believe in. I feel like had he gone harder at any point earlier, probably have been beaten further by Shishkin.
That's the way it looked to me. Shishkin, and even though Energamine is a 2.5 mile winner and may well win over further in the future, at this trip, Shishkin is the strongest there.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just a brilliant performance from him. He's now rated higher by the BHA than his predecessor at the same yard, Altior. £2 higher, I think I'm right in saying. 177 as opposed to 175, your favourite subject, ratings. That's
very important, because I can see Shishkin competing in a handicap chase somewhere in the near future. So he's rated absolutely so relevant. I'm glad the handicappers went to the bother of getting that right.
We're trying to compare generations. Right, so let's have a look at the impact on the Betway Queen Mother Champion Chase betting, shall we? These are Paddy Power prices. 4-6 now, Shishkin. 3-1, Energamen. Shaq and Pessoir, his stable companion, who we'll discuss in a moment, is 8-1. Nubi Negra, 10s, and Grenadine, 16-1. Now, we are going to try and work out how, if Energamen can take Shishkin on and beat him at Cheltenham. But first of all, let's get Willie Mullins' idea about that, because after Alaho won at Thurles on Sunday, Gary O'Brien asked him whether Cheltenham would suit Energamen, that horse running there, would be running there for the first time.
I don't know. Does our fella jump a little right on occasions, but other times he jumps straight. We never worried about it before, but we don't know whether he's going to be better or worse at Cheltenham, We'll have to wait and see.
And Willie, understandably, in the build-up to the race, you and Nicky Henderson were both saying all the right things, very respectful of the opposition, etc., which you have to be. But in your heart of hearts, were you going there pretty confident in your horse yesterday?
No, God, you couldn't be going there confident, no. I was going there that our horse was in great order, and I think he was in great order. And I think, as I said yesterday, we got the run of the race. He jumped well, did everything Paul wanted him to do, did everything Paul set out to do. Have we anything left in the locker? You'd wonder about that, whether the track, so we've a left-handed track in Cheltenham, more undulating than Ascot. They're all the things, they're the unknowns. And, then we look at the race yesterday, look at the way we rode it, the tactics we employed. Should we change them? Could we change them? Should we stick to what we're good at? I don't know. They're all the things that we're going to be asking ourselves time and time again.
Think tank or
that'll be it. So if you have a spare hour or two yourself, you can come down and throw your Tubbinsworth in. Yeah, I'm not
sure. So it sounds to me, Ruby, as though you're all scratching your heads.
Yeah, basically, Lydia. But I suppose you have to look at every event and try and learn from it, and try and do something. You're trying to make up a half a length as such. But it's probably realistically, when you switch direction, it's going to be a bit more than that. But yeah, you have to look at it and see what can be done. You can't just go back to the battle and do the same thing again, because that doesn't work.
Okay, well, let's compare the task in terms of the two race courses. And you've had you've ridden Cheltenham and Ascot many, many, many times, and you're very familiar with all the angles that can be employed by riders at each track. Looking at Ascot and thinking about how the Clarence House was run, and comparing it to the old course at Cheltenham and thinking about how the Queen Mother Champion Chase might be run, how might you approach it if you were on Energamen?
We just got two maps to try and illustrate this if we can. We don't have the gradients, but Ascot is a stiffer track than many people believe it to be or understand it to be. So, the descents and the ups and downs of Cheltenham are more frequent, but in Ascot, they're longer and more sustained. But I think it's the jumping is the biggest difference between Ascot and Cheltenham. There's 13 fences in that Clarence House. There's 14 in the Queen Mother Champion Chase, over a furlong shorter. So you're taking a furlong out and sticking in an extra fence. So that's probably the angle you're most looking at. Now, there's three long runs in Ascot in a two-mile chase without a jump. And that's from the time you jump the first till you get to the second. It's a long run without a jump. Again, from the back of the third fence to the fourth fence, big long gallop without a run. You run down to the bottom of the hill at Swindley Bottom and all around that bend before you get back to fence number eight, I think it is. Big long run. And again, back to when you started, three out to two out. So you have three long runs without jumps in Ascot. Whereas in Cheltenham, you do have two, but they're at a much different stage. The longest runs in Cheltenham are from the last ditch, four out to two, three out, and then from three out to two out. Now, a lot of that is also done on the descent rather than the ascent. So that definitely brings jumping back into the equation more at Cheltenham, the extra fence. And you've more fences come at you quicker in Cheltenham. You've jumped two fences in the space of a furlong and a half. You've only one jump in Ascot. And the first four fences, and even to the fifth fence on the bend, there's not as much galloping to be done there as there is in the early stages of Ascot, which would suit the jumper rather than the stayer.
Yeah, okay. So the argument is that Enigamen, with his slick, fast, fluent, low jumping, will be able to take advantage of that at Cheltenham. Is that not looking at his habit of adjusting right? He's going around a tight left-handed track this time around, and he's low. Might Cheltenham catch him out?
Oh, that's, of course it could. And that's the same argument. People say, like, oh, if you went faster, as soon as you go faster, you're upping the risk with the jumping. So you have to be able to balance that out. But the first four fences in Cheltenham are in a straight line. Well, pretty much a straight line. So adjusting right shouldn't be the issue. It's not you get to the fifth fence that you're going to see whether going right is going to catch you out or not. But it's more so to what you could conserve, Lydia, more than what you will gain. And with the jumps coming up quick, can you conserve enough not to slow as much late in the race to repel Shishkin? That's the way you'd be looking at it.
There's also an argument going around that because Shishkin had that peck at Ascot and was occasionally losing a little bit of ground at his fences, that his jumping might be put under pressure by Enigamen in the champion chase. I'm not sure I'm convinced by that. I felt that was an Ascot thing. This is a horse that's gone round and won at Arkell before and has got himself out of trouble in the Supreme and the old course as well.
Yeah, but you have to look at that mistake and think, right, if Enigamen had made that mistake, you would be arguing it was enough to have won him the race. But Shishkin made it. So that automatically, you have to put that argument to him too, puts him a more clear-cut winner. So Enigamen, to me, probably has more to make up than we're actually allowing for.
Yeah, I agree. Then again, it's just one serious mistake, isn't it? Either way.
Oh, that's all. But I suppose looking at it maybe with my old hat on as a jockey, you're going out riding Shishkin thinking, as long as I don't have bad luck, I'm on the best horse. For whatever way you look at it, going out in Shishkin, you know you need luck. On Enigamen, you know you're going to need a bit of luck to win. And that'd be my ruthless way of looking at it, that going out in Shishkin, as long as I don't have any bad luck, I'm fine.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Now, we said it was difficult to sort of craft an argument of getting an Enigamen to beat Shishkin. We thought we'd have a look at it, didn't we, Ruby, through the sort of prism of previous races. We're going to start with the 2018 Queen Mother Champion Chase, which had the matchup between Duvan, Special Tiara, and Altior. Do we have some relevant players potentially in this year's field that can play the part of those horses?
We think we do, and that's why we picked it and put it first. Could Shaq and Pursuit be Special Tiara? Obviously, Willie's voiced his thoughts on last year's race and that Shaq wants to gallop. So when you're watching the 2018 version, you'll see Special Tiara goes, Duvan sits second, Patrick Mullins was riding him, and Altior's in behind him. Now, even at the back of the second fence, you can see Nico having to give Altior a little bit of a squeeze away from the second fence. And by the time they get to the fifth, this race is taking shape. Special Tiara's in front, Duvan is tracking him, Altior's behind him. Could that be Shaq and Pursuit, Enigamen, Shishkin, possibly. Down the hill to the water jump, Duvan jumps beside Special Tiara. The playing fence, Patrick is rolling on. Duvan is attacking, jumps to the front at the eighth, and then goes with speed and jumps into the ditch. And that's the end of the race. How he was going, he looked to be travelling well, but you don't get paid at the fourth last. So who knows what will happen. Now, obviously, Min then came from the back, pulled out off the home turn, looking like he was going to take Altior. But Altior has that turn of foot that we saw from Shishkin at the back of the last in Ascot Altier shows his D here, going to the second last in a way where he just takes over on Mean. Now, your favourite race, Lydia, is the 2019 version.
This is the video that you're going to sit down and show Paul Townend at the Champion Chase and say, now this, Paul, is what you shouldn't do.
I don't think I need to show Paul Townend. He's well aware of that. But look, every couple of years, you do fall into the trap of making a mistake you've made in the past. And even when you're... Paul Townend on Enogamine can't purely go out to ride to beat Shishkin. He has to try and ride to maximise Enogamine as well as trying to beat Shishkin. And I tried that on Mean in 2019. St. Calvados made the running. We left Altior in second place. And everyone seemed to be of the same opinion. There wasn't a conflab blow at the start. No one wanted to help take on or try and outstay Altior. So everyone sat off Altior, down to three out. Everyone's queued up behind him for the sprint. But lo and behold, as they round off the bend, So Royal has the gears to go and join Altior on the inside. Politolog comes at him on the outside. But who was the fastest horse? It was still Altior. Mean's not even in the first three. So, you know, Paul, you can't go out just to try and do something to beat one horse. You still have to ride your own to maximise where you can finish.
And I think these two examples are particularly apposite because Shishkin reminds me uncannily of Altior.
Yeah, me too.
How about you? Yeah. Nico de Bonvo interestingly made a distinction. He said that Altior, he implied Altior was a bit quicker than Shishkin in his younger days, that a more mature Altior is more like Shishkin.
Yeah, he'd know them better. I mean, I never had the privilege of riding either. And I said, but yeah, he is. I mean, did Altior travel smoother as a novice chaser than Shishkin did? I'd have to go back and watch it. I don't have a memory of Altior being sluggish, but you take Nico's word for that.
Yeah, I mean, even as a novice hurdler, he used to, the power boosters used to kick in, didn't they, on Altior. Let's move on to Sprinter Sacra and his two wins, starting with the 2013 Champion Chase. This is the least relevant, probably, isn't it?
Yeah, this was a riot. Mail de Bernay, I think it was called, made the running, size in Europe, Summersby, Sanctuaire. But look, Sprinter Sacra is just always going so much easier compared to the opposition. Like even at the fourth last, where Barry Geraghty gives him a squeeze, Sprinter puts down, dances in front of it. But by the time he turns to run down the hill, size in Europe is treading water and he's absolutely running away. Blythe the third last and the rest, as I say, is history. This was a brilliant performance and he was just so dominant. And I don't think that has any real relevance on this year's race. I think Shishkin is the best horse, but I don't think he's going to be this dominant.
Yeah, I agree with that. And of course, this is the tearjerker, the 3 years later, the Queen of the Champion Chase that Sprinter Sacra came back from setbacks, from problems, health problems to be able to win. What relevance does this have?
Yeah, it was a tearjerker for me too, for a different reason. What reference does this have? Look, Undersoul went that special, Tiara, and I think it's the latter part of this race that is going to show you the difference. Special Tiara ended up in front. The four fence going a really strong gallop. Undersoul made a mistake, which is very unlike him. And then when they get down to the sixth fence, Undersoul gets up the Special Tiara. Special Tiara jumps back into the lead at the eight. The 10 fence, they land up sides again, and then they get going down the hill, Undersaw and Special Tiara, or I got going Undersaw down the hill to three out. But Sprinter Sacra just comes out from behind us, and what he has going to the bend, when I'm flat to the boards and looking almost for a breather, Sprinter Sacra just kicks into overdrive. Mm-hmm. And that's the common denominator with 2 mile champion chasers. They're able to up the ante off the bend. Sprinter Sacra, Altior, Shishkin, and the other, I think, common theme amongst that, Lydia, is a Nicky Henderson horse beating a Willie Mullins horse.
we don't mean to rub it in. It's just coincidental, Ruby. And we on this side of the IRC have got to cling on to something as well. I agree. I think the gears is the thing about the very top 2 mile chases, which Shishkin clearly has. I think Enogamene is just a galloper. I mean, some people will think this is crazy, but I think he should go up in trip.
I suppose if you're holding a docket at 14 to 1, you would like that for the Ryanair.
It's got nothing to do with that. It's got, honestly, genuinely nothing to do with that.
But I think the relevance is both Mean and Undersoul did end up winning Ryanair chases after being defeated in champion chases. So It could be that that's what happens in time, but I would be shocked, amazed if Enogamine went that road this year.
Yeah, no, I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm just trying to get a honest governor, get at what the horse might be. Last example we're going to look at is the year 2000 Champion Chase. Oh, what an amazing, epic race this was between Edouard en Bleu and Direct Route. What relevance to this?
This is the ultimate, not smash and grab, but go out, all out.
Eyeballs out.
In a sense, because look, you've Edouard en Bleu celebrate, Flagship Uberales, Direct Route, but fly down to the force. But at the fourth fence, they're still pretty bunched up. It's not till they round the bend into the back straight that AP decides, here, I'm going on Edouard en Bleu. And he never backs off in there. Fifth fence, he sends him to the eighth, outside the wings, again at the ninth. And he's just has the hammer on all the way down the hill to the third last, second last, Flagship Uberales misses. And off the bend, then you're thinking, oh, Direct Route's going to come and get him. But that was a really brave ride from AP. But that was pre-watering. Back in 2000, I think Tutchev had broken the track record the day before in the Arkle. I'm not so sure on water ground you can ride Cheltenham that way anymore. So eyeballs out, as you're calling it. I don't know, can you go eyeballs out in Cheltenham anymore?
Yeah, maybe not. I suppose that Edouard en Bleu turned out to be a stayer as well, though, didn't he?
For King George after, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of ride. So just be interesting whether that is an option. What would you do?
And what would I do?
Yeah.
I would be going out knowing I needed a bit of luck, so I would bank on the jumping. Most likely put myself on the floor, but sure, hey, wouldn't be the first time I did that.
And really, everything adds up to be in Shishkin's advantage. You know, Nico de Boinville doesn't have to worry about that, does he?
No, he doesn't. But likewise, Paul Townham and Lauda, the pressure's on Nico, because all the expectation is now on Shishkin.
True that. Okay, let's talk about another angle that people were talking about post the Clarence House. And this is whether how the horses come out of the race, how they recover. There seemed to be contrasting thoughts about that immediately afterwards. Willie Mullins saying that Enigmin has clearly had a tough race. Nicky Henderson reporting on the Sunday that Shishkin was bouncing. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it can be. And look, as hard as it is to explain, I do firmly believe horses know the difference between winning and losing. And I don't think Peddler's Cross that he ever come back to the horse that Hurricane Fly beat in the Champion Hurdle thereafter. I'm not sure he did. He was undefeated going into that Champion Hurdle, and or maybe he'd been beaten way back in his career, but he was on a good winning run, Peddler's Cross. And yeah, Enogamin has to bounce out of it, and Willie will give him plenty of time. But look, if he's telling you he's tired, he was pretty tired.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, I suppose the race that everyone has in their mind is that duel between Altior and Surname, which was much referenced afterwards, and horses not being the same afterwards. So I suppose...
I'm not so sure about that. I would believe that Enogamin and Shishkin in January were in a better place fitness-wise to have this race than Surname and Altior would have been in November. Because that's just time and fitness.
I absolutely agree. I think that the whole of that argument has been overstated. But nonetheless, if we think about it from, say, Numa Negra's point of view and have a look at the closing stages of last year's Queen Mother Champion Chase, Numa Negra finishing second to put the kettle on, Shaq and Pessoir, who we'll move on to in a minute, finishing third. What the Skeltons are thinking is we've got the freshest horse. This is a horse that's flopped in the Tingle Creek last time, second in the Champion Chase, has won a Schlur, likes Cheltenham. This horse is fresher than either Shishkin or Enogamin.
Yeah, he has that going for him. But look, even last year's race, you look at them turning in like they're in a heap. I don't think anybody can see a replay of this race. Shaq and Pessoir gets an unbelievable run through on the inside of Put the Kettle On, pings the second last. Numa Negra doesn't get the greatest of runs, has to switch. You've Grenadine in there as well. And he comes home well from the last. Numa Negra gets outside, Put the Kettle On, and lunges late and doesn't get there. But I think, Lydia, with the more utmost respect to Numa Negra, I think on every piece of form we have freshness. He's going to want freshness and a bit.
I think you're right. Okay, how about Shaq and Pessoir? Because that's not true of him. He's won the Dublin Chase twice with some really high-class performances, even better at Punchestown at the end of last season. So far, he's not proven at Cheltenham. You've articulated a view where if he runs against his stable companion Energumen in the Champion Chase, he's the likeliest to lead, because the feeling was that last season in the Champion Chase, the team wasn't aggressive enough.
Yeah, that's some opinions. For me, the more I look at last year's Champion Chase, the slower I am to forgive Shaq and Boursois to get the run he got off the home turn, 2-2 out, to go there on the bridle, to go to the last pretty much on the bridle, and for Paul Townend not to lift his hand off the reins till they'd crossed the junction of the tracks and still not win.
Yeah.
You're thinking, how?
Yeah.
So I'm afraid, Shaq, and I'm a massive fan, but you have to prove it to me.
I feel exactly the same way. And I think he just looked uncomfortable. I don't think that's his place to be. Is he a complication for Energumen? I mean, if they were in different yards, would you look at that horse and think, oh, that's going to complicate what I want to do on Energumen?
No, I don't think so. And even at Ascot on Saturday, had David Bass chosen to send First Flow, he didn't. He elected to follow. But had he chosen to jump out and go, Paul would have sat second. All Energumen wanted was an even gallop. Be it that he was in first, second, third, or even fourth at Ascot, he was just going to go his own speed. And I think you can often overcomplicate position, where actually it's the pace you're going is far more important.
Is there, Ruby, a scenario, outside scenario though it might be, if Shaq and Boursois is particularly impressive in the Dublin Chase, that Paul Townend could end up riding him because he doesn't have a defeat to Shishkin to his name, whereas, as we've just discussed at length, we can't find an obvious way that Energumen is going to turn it around with Shishkin?
I don't know, Lydia. I haven't asked Paul, so I'm not going to speak for him, but
if
I was in his shoes, I wouldn't even entertain the question, let alone try and give you an answer.
No, but go on.
If I was in his shoes, that's what you'd be getting. Absolutely blanked. How dare you even ask? Because I don't want to be in that awkward situation.
Oh, it's taking me back, this conversation. Yeah, it really is.
I'm not putting words in his mouth. I would be the same, to be honest with you. I wouldn't comment on it till I've ridden Shaq and Boursois at the Dublin Racing Festival and how he comes out of the race, because to me, you're a jockey, you're not an anti-post punter, so why nail your colours to the mast before you have to?
There are three British-trained entries at this point for the Dublin Chase. I've mentioned Grenadine, and the others are Editor de Sheet for Gary Moore and Sky Pirate for John Joe O'Neill. Paul Nicholls has indicated that Grenadine does go for the Dublin Chase, which is fantastic in terms of international sport. It's really good to see him going over. Do you see any of those being able to trouble Shaq and Boursois if Shaq and Boursois is back to his best?
They're entitled to think they can, because all that anybody can go on is the evidence of what they've seen. Tingle Creek, blowout, missed Leopardstown at Christmas. So if you're training the opposition, yeah, of course you'd be thinking of coming. Shaq and Boursois, look, I saw him Tuesday. He worked well on Tuesday morning. He's in great form. But look, I think Shaq and Boursois is a really, really good horse, but he has to start proving it to me on the track. And of his last three runs, two have been disappointing.
Okay, so those are our reflections on the Clarence House, our projections looking ahead to the Queen Mother Champion Chase. And so before we talk about Alaho, let's hear a question from Noel Hayes.
Hi, Lydia, good evening. My question relates to Alaho and the prospect of him switching to run in the Gold Cup at this year's Cheltenham Festival. I guess, in short, will he once campaign the horse like he was a thorough stayer? He's already won one Ryanair Chase, and winning a second does nothing for his legacy or the legacy of the trainer. The owners seem to be on record as suggesting that their ultimate target in ownership is to win the Gold Cup. And I mean, ultimately, he's an older, stronger, more mature horse and now has better prospects for staying that Gold Cup trip. So I guess, in brief, the question is, what are the chances of Alaho switching to run in this year's Cheltenham Gold Cup?
Yeah, I can see Noel's argument, but Alaho has run 15 times in his life, and five of those have been at 3 miles or 3 miles plus. He's only managed to win the once. He's ran three times over 2 miles or 2 miles and two furlongs and has never won. And at 2.5 miles to 2 miles and five, he's ran seven times and won the five of them. So I think that Willie Mullins has eventually found the correct distance for Alaho, and therefore, why would you be swapping it? I mean, legacy, I don't think Willie Mullins' ego allows him to think about building a legacy. He's building a business, not a legacy. And I think it's okay for other people to think, you know, try this. But the consequences of being wrong when you're training them are much different to consequences of people with opinions.
I think Alaho looks so well fitted to the Ryanair. If we think how he ripped that race apart last season, I think he can become the first horse since Alberta's run to win it for a second time and only the second horse ever to do that. Let's have a look at what he did at Thurles on Sunday. This became a non-event, didn't it? I mean, Fakir Dudaris has been thumped by Alaho before, but he made it worse by an error at the very first fence.
He did. Look, they lined up. Alaho booked out in front. Fakir sat on the inside notebook just outside him, and Battle Over the Unas following them. Long run to the first fence and Thurles at this distance, and when they get there, Fakir Dudaris steps straight into it and makes a howler of a mistake. Mark Walsh does well to stay on him. Alaho goes to the third fence last in the back straight and pings it. Now Fakir is sat last. Mark Walsh is trying to do the right thing, give him every chance to recover and at least finish second if he can. The fifth fence, though, watch how Alaho even gets a bit of ground on notebook. He's very quick through the air, Alaho. Sixth fence, he was very good, but his ears are pricked and there's no tension on the reins, which is a little bit un-Alaho-esque. He used to be a bit keen. He's definitely more relaxed now. They get the 10th fence and they're up in the ante. He gets in tight, but he's very quick at it. And again, at the 11th, before the second last, before the turn in, it's not a big, massive, flamboyant jump, but he is very fast from A to B. And he puts a lot of distance between himself and the others down the straight. Starts to quicken up, lengthen more so than quicken, which is probably hard to see the injection of speed because his legs don't look to be going any faster, but his stride looks to be getting longer. And he gets to the last and just stands outside the wings, which Paul Townend wasn't expecting. But arguably a stronger performance than what he did in this race last year. So it backs up your opinion, Lydia, that he will become the first horse since Alberta's run?
Yes.
In a second.
Yeah. And only the second one ever to do it. There was a talk at one point after he won the John Durkin that he would go straight to Cheltenham. Hurrah, he ran again in the horse and jockey note.
I know. Even Gary O'Brien was saying that to Willie Mullins on Sunday, and Willie was looking at him as if to say, "Who said that?"
Oh, really?
And Gary was kind of saying that you said
you. Right. In his mind, apart from the in his mind, he didn't actually say it. Was it that Alaho improved for racing last season? He seemed to, and he also, did. Sorry,
he did look to improve for racing last year, but Willie's mind was watching him in the John Durkin thinking, "I won't run him at Christmas," after having such a hard race. It's not what he verbalised, but
right,
I believe that's what he meant.
Right. Okay. Thanks for translating. Let's think about First Flow, who's only entered in the Queen Mother Champion Chase. We mentioned him in passing. He was carried out in his shield when third in the Clarence House. He's since gone up in trip and won at the Peterborough at Huntingdon over 2.5 miles. I was slightly surprised in retrospect now that he wasn't in the Ryanair. I'd have thought that the new course would suit him a bit better than the old as well.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, he did beat Angel's Breath at Ascot 2 in a novice chase over 2 miles and 3 furlongs many moons ago. Yeah, it is slightly surprising. I don't know, is he going to go to the Champion Chase or is Kim Bailey Ian Aintree have a go at them there?
Possibly. En route via the Ascot Chase, you would think, where he might run into Dashiell Drasher, who ran second in the inaugural Fleur-de-Lis Chase at Lingfield. He was just worried out of it by 2 for gold. This was an extraordinary race to watch.
It was. I think he just got outstayed maybe at the very end of it. But I think a lot of Dashiell Drasher's form ties in with the ill-fated Master Tommy Tucker, who sadly broke his leg at Lingfield. And to me, he looked to be the horse that was coming to win the race. And I think a lot of Dashiell Drasher's form ties in with Master Tommy Tucker. And I think he ran to about the same level that he has been running.
Yes, I thought that Master Tommy Tucker was just beginning to creep into things as well, having been ridden really nice and cold. It punches such a hole, I think, certainly onto the British scene, the loss of Master Tommy Tucker. And Harry Derham has written a really moving tribute to him, which you can find on the Racing Post website. I'd urge you to read that. So Dashiell Drasher, he was declared for the Ryanair last season and pulled out because of drying ground. Do you think Jeremy Scott might have a go with him? He's such a fabulous horse.
He is a wonderful horse. And he does. He brings something to the mix. And think slightly shorter might suit him.
Frodon, I mention him because when he was chatting, Paul Nicholls, his trainer, was chatting to Nick Luck in a podcast last week, he was saying that he might yet supplement the horse for the Ryanair, having not entered him at Cheltenham at all. He was having a look at the Cotswold Chase this weekend. He didn't enter, which suggests that he'll be coming over for the Irish Gold Cup. But he could yet enter through the side door for Cheltenham.
Yeah, he's a previous winner of the race. He could. I mean, look, he still shows that he has plenty of spark and zest in him. We'll see how he gets on in Leopardstown. But, yeah, didn't enter him in the first place. But I think we entered on his own. The Gold Cup took him out and then supplemented him. So it does happen.
It can happen indeed. Having a look at the betting for the Ryanair, again, Paddy Power odds, 11 to 10, Alaho. And Ergamin's in there at 8 to 1. Don't think it's going to happen. San Calvados 8-1 and Chamblou is 12-1 and he'll be heading straight there, I think. Let's talk about the Boodles Cheltenham Gold Cup, because Boodles have signed up with Cheltenham to sponsor that, as well as the Leading Jockey Award and the Juvenile Handicap Hurdle at the Cheltenham Festival. And Royal Pagai could be one for the Cheltenham Gold Cup after winning back-to-back Peter Marsh's at Haydock on Saturday.
Yeah, he could. And it's a good enough performance. I mean, they lined up and they jumped out. Sam Brown, who was given £16 then, eventually beats a half a length, is up there on the pace under Aidan Coleman. Royal Pagai drops in. I mean, they're round the bend heading to the second first fence even. They're doing sort of 31 miles an hour on the screen. And that's the fastest they clock at any stage in this race, on the television anyway. Because the fifth fence, Royal Pagai jams on and pops the fifth fence a little bit slow. And the seventh fence, you see Charlie Deitch thinks about asking him, changes his mind, and Royal Pagai still comes out of his hands. He was really quick through the air. He was good again at the 10th, but gets a nudge on landing. And that's what took my eye with Royal Pagai. They were dropped back to 29 miles an hour at that stage, and he's still getting a nudge to hold his position. And you're thinking, is he going to be fast enough? The 13th fence, Sam Brown pings it. Royal Pagai was okay, but again, has to be ridden away from the back of it. And, you know, when they briefly head to the third last fence, when they're quickening, they get back to around 30 miles an hour. But, you know, and then they just keep plugging away down the straight. Good jump at the two out, puts Royal Pagai in front. Sam Brown misses the last, and Royal Pagai outstays him. I know it's the concession of weight, et cetera, et cetera, but I still find him a hard horse to see winning a Gold Cup.
Yeah, I still don't think that the track particularly suits him, but Rich Ritchie, his owner, said afterwards they've got to have another go. He's just won off a mark of 1.63. It's probably a career best. And the horse, of course, got injured in the Gold Cup last time, didn't he? He tore off the front of his hoof.
Yeah, cornet band or a cornet band injury or something. Look, and maybe you can forgive him that, Venetia and Charlie Deitch for having a wonderful season. So who knows?
Now, tell me about Album Photo being entered in a 3-mile handicap hurdle at the Dublin Racing Festival. Is could that happen?
Look, he's in off a mark of 1.43. He's been risen a pound, having not run over hurdles for a couple of years, which I do think one of the assistants found quite hard to understand. But yeah, he's in off a very favourable mark, but I'd be surprised if he did.
Yeah. I would have thought so. I mean, the ground has been the discussion point for the Dublin Racing Festival. What's going on?
But the chase track, the hurdle track in Leopardstown, the middle hurdle track in Leopardstown, which is this flat course, which is watered all summer, is always much slower than the inside hurdle track and the outside chase track. So perhaps the ground could be okay. But in fairness to Leopardstown, they are pumping the water on, by all accounts I've had several conversations, and they are not missing it. They've gotten the message, I think.
So if we have a look at the Boodles Gold Cup betting, we've got Aplutar at the top of it at 130. Royal Pagal obviously has paid him a compliment because he absolutely thumped him in the Betfair Chase.
He did. He did thump him. You know, obviously he's probably, I'm assuming, going the same road as he went last year straight to Cheltenham for Aplutar. You'll probably see Manila Indo next weekend. He ran in last year's Leopardstown or Irish Gold Cup as well. So, it's shaping up, but look, I wish I'd said each way Album Photo.
Regrets. You've had a few. Right, if we have a look at Saturday, we've got the Cotswold Chase. So this could well be intriguing. Chantry House back after pulling up at the King George. He's got to prove himself, hasn't he?
He has, but he missed a second in the King George. They were going quicker than he was comfortable at. And looking back at his races last year, even when he won the Turners that it is now, they didn't go mad quick early in the race. Again, at Aintree when he won, they didn't go hard early. The races that he's been best in, he's been able to get on his feet, whereas in the King George, they went really hard early and took him off his feet. And I think the excuse could be as simple as that.
And if I Wright runs well in this, isn't he shouldering his way into integrated company for Harriet Graham and Callum Bewley?
I wish he'd shoulder his way into the Grand National.
Well, he might just yet. Okay, so that's where we are with the intermediate and staying chasers. Let's move on to the novices. Now, unaccountably, Ruby, Henry de Bromhead seems undeterred by our concerns about Bob Olinger for the Turners. He goes straight to Cheltenham, no Dublin Racing Festival, no brand advisory, it's the Turners. We're not arguing about the horse's ability. I want to talk about some form lines that have been given a boost and some horses that are pretty good in their own right. Edward Stone, who is the great British hope for the Arkle. Minella Drama, who finished well beaten by him in the Henry VIII, has won at Haydock. And Warlord, who was second to him in that same grade one at Sandown, has won at Lingfield. So those are some positive signs of that form.
Yeah, Warlord looked like coming off third best, turning in behind Il Redotto and Favoir, then looked like coming off second best, but eventually grounded out to win and win quite well for Brendan Powell and the Tizzards. A minute of drama. I think his performance was better than it even looked. He pulled himself up completely going to the last fence in Haydock, and the speedometer on the bottom actually is the best indicator. He drops down to nearly 20 miles an hour to jump the last 21 miles an hour, but by the time he hits the winning post, he's gotten all the way back up to 28. So I thought that was interesting, how much he slowed himself down, but how much he had left to quicken back up.
Yes, his trainer, Donald Kane, described him as wild. He's clearly got a mind of his own. Now, having a difference of opinion, Donald and rider Brian Hughes, Donald's thinking Aintree and Brian is trying to persuade him Ayr. And of course, Ayr comes first this year and you probably can't do both. Meanwhile, Joe Tizzard is talking about the Arkle, all the Turners for Warlord. He did enter him in the Lightning Novices Chase. If we have a look at the declarations, third time lucky. It's good to see him back, the return of him after he ran third in the Henry VIII when he went a bit too fast and put pressure on his own jumping.
Yeah, he did. And he'll have to bounce back from that. But it'd be interesting to see how he gets on. I still think he has to improve to get up to Edward Stone's league.
Very much agree. At least Paul Pleasure's presence provides some pace in the race.
Some. It's a bit of an understatement. I don't think third time lucky to be keen anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It could well set up to suit him well. Okay, that's the update on the novice chasers. Now, there was some interesting action at Haydock on Saturday over hurdles as well, and we've got a direct comparison between Tommy's Oscar, who continues to force his way into the champion hurdle picture, and the novice John Bond. First up, Ruby, you're going to compare and contrast how the two races were run.
Obviously, we have two hurdle races run over the same track, same distance, so we can compare them both. But look, we know Navajo Pass and Global Citizen go really quick in the Champion Hurdle Trial, so we're going to ignore them and we're going to compare Tommy's Oscar, who's in third place on the left-hand side, with John Bonn, who's in JP McManus's colours on the right-hand side. And at the first hurdle, there's about 3.4 seconds of a difference between Tommy's Oscar and John Bonn. Now, don't mind the right-hand side yet, because that was only the second hurdle, because the left-hand side at the third, Tommy's Oscar's taken off, pops it, and he's still going to be roughly the same distance in front of John Bonn, 3.4 seconds. Into the back straight, again, John Bonn is about to jump, but ignore that, because that's only the fourth. That's Navajo Pass and Global Citizen go to the fifth. Here comes Tommy's Oscar about to jump it now, and he's increased his advantage to nearly 5.6 seconds over John Bonn, who's taken off now. Now, obviously, the hot race on the left was run 5 seconds racer in the, and 5 seconds faster than the race on the right.
Interesting stuff. So totally different types of races and quite a big disparity in the overall times, Ruby.
Yeah, there was. Tommy's Oscar's overall time was 5 seconds quicker than John Bond's. And look, I'm going to analyse Danny McMenamin's ride a little bit later and in a bit more detail. But look, Tommy's Oscar is going in the right direction. He's a really slick hurdler. He's rising up the ranks. I wasn't so sure whether his penalty was fully justified after his last win, considering they claimed £7 off him. But he's a horse who seems to be improving every day he goes to the races.
Definitely. We'll talk about him later, as you say. Let's focus on John Bond. Now, he got his reviews for this win in the Rossington Main were quite negative in several quarters. I can't really have that. He went to Haydock for experience and he got it.
Yeah, I'd say more so people were expecting to be blown away and then warned by the manner of his victory, and then they jumped to conclude, well, everyone forms their opinion, and most were a little bit downbeat. I tend more to agree with you than the downbeat ones myself. I thought it was a very tactical race. They went quite slow. Look, Richmond Lake made the running. John Bond, as you rightly say, was there for experience. So he tucks in, he sat in third or fourth. He's very good at the first hurdle, very good at the second hurdle. Might I was on his inside. But as they come up past the winning post, they're going the same speed as the horses were going into Peter Marsh, which is a 3.25 mile, 1 furlong chase. This is a 2 mile novice hurdle. They're doing the same speed. So that'll tell you how steady they're probably going in this 2 mile novice hurdle. But it does start to get a little bit quicker down the back when Dommy Boy pulls his way to the front. And that actually injects the pace into the race too soon off a slow pace. And they get racing from the fifth hurdle round the bend. They're really trapping the tree out where John Bond jumps into the back of Dommy Boy and loses his momentum. But it's Aidan Coleman's body language then. I know people are saying, well, what about John Bond's head carriage? But watch Aidan Coleman going to two out. He sits up a long way from the hurdle and allows John Bond to shorten up and pop it, giving himself a bit more ground to make up. But he wants to teach this horse to race. And he does, pulls it out in his right hand and he heads, or his left, and he heads across to the rail, gets himself to the front, flies the last and grinds it out to win and keeps going well enough to win. But I think he's kicked through the gears and won at a tight track from off the pace, off a slow gallop. I think there's more to like than dislike, actually.
Yep, totally agree. I mean, he's jumped neatly. As you say, he's managed to overcome the way the race was run. He's been settled, so he's learned something else. You know, previously, in the previous two starts, Aidan Coleman has let him stride on when there's been no pace. This time he's deliberately held him up so that he learns a new thing, because he ain't going to be leading in the Supreme, is he? So we've seen a different way of going. And that head carriage you referred to, I don't know, I always associate that with effort of a horse trying to overcome against the run of the race. Do you know what I mean? Because he's going into a quickening pace.
So do I. And I can't remember John Bond. Maybe he is at home and he's working, but being asked to do that in a race, and I much preferred it from the last home. I didn't have too many, I didn't walk away thinking, well, that won't win the Supreme. I most definitely didn't.
I agree. Other people have pointed, critics of John Bond's demeanour have pointed to how sweaty he got, and clearly he's been closely studied for this. Do you think, given it's the Supreme, the Raw, Cheltenham Festival, et cetera, that they might employ a red hood, as in for the preliminaries only, or for earplugs beforehand or something like that?
They could easily do it. But to me, the best part about John Bond is he's only keen and messy in the preliminaries.
Yes.
As soon as he breaks into a canter, he's much more relaxed. So I wouldn't be so worried about what he does beforehand, because he's not going to run away with you in the race. Most horses, they get excited like that, then over race and they just pull. He doesn't. As soon as he breaks into a canter, he's relaxed.
Yeah, that's why I'm talking about aids that are only used pre-race. You don't want to mess with the way he runs his race, because it's fine.
No. Yeah, I agree. So yeah, a red hood would be ideal.
Okay, well, we asked the roadies, weighing up the most recent action on the track, who now has the strongest Sky Bet Supreme Novices hurdle claims and why? And they go pretty much in betting order. If we have a look first of all at the Sky Bet Supreme Novices hurdle betting, Paddy Power have Constitution Hill at twos, the Double D Dice at Dunamo at 7-2, John Bond at 4-1. He was pushed out in some quarters after that win at Haydock. I think they were itching to do that personally. And Sir Gerhard is 6-1, fourth in, and he runs at the Dublin Racing Festival. Our roadies like Constitution Hill best with 38.6% of the vote, Dysart Dynamo with 34.7%, John Bond at 19.3%. And if I just run through some views, Justin Kavanagh is focusing on how relaxed Constitution Hill is in the preliminary, straightforward jumping. On debut, his turn of foot was incredible in the Tolworth, how he quickened up on that ground. Dan Belmore agrees, no concerns about the occasion or the ground. Only slight worry is a small field where Dysart Dynamo is allowed to make all. Ruby, if you had to sum up Constitution Hill in a few words, what are his assets?
Stamina, Tollwood, okay. Sandown, he stays. He's strong there.
Okay, so the John Bond fans, Anthony Wignall and Mark Rogerson have had chat. Andy just thinks that John Bond's the best horse in the race. Mark Rogerson said he wasn't on the bridle jumping the last against Richmond's Lake, which I think we've already addressed. We're of a different view, Mark. Mikey Hobbs, though, is a fan. He'll get a lead from Dice Like Dynamo. But don't be surprised if they go for a red hood or earplugs in the preliminaries. OK, so Mikey Hobbs is thinking along those lines as well. So if you had to set up John Bond, what are his particular strengths?
Not speed, pace. I think huge stride, a bit like Duvan. He's a lot of pace. I think however fast they go, John Bond will be able to travel.
Kevin KS113, the 113th of the KSs, says, Dysart, as the clock doesn't lie, his last run was unbelievable, a repeat of that win, and he wins by 5+ lengths. Your summing up of Dysart Dynamo?
Similar to John Bond. I'd say he's a very pacey individual, likes to jump and go.
Sean Morgan has got a sister. Now, keep it to yourself, guys. If a novice hurdler from Ireland isn't top of the market, back the one closest to the top. Great value. Diana Thompson says, Sir Gerhard, I spotted the twinkle in Ruby's eye when he spoke of him last week. Diana is being led purely by you, Ruby. Have you got the weight of responsibility on your shoulders?
I don't know if I'd be able to cope.
Anthony likes Sir Gerhard as well. He's talking about his turn of foot, which allow him to steal some crucial lengths in the Supreme, just like he did in the bumper. He's been up the hill. Maybe the others won't enjoy it. Sir Gerhard, in a few words, Ruby.
Speed. He has, as that man has just said, he has a terrific turn of foot. But up the hill, fair hill and sand down. I think if you've won there, you'll cope with Cheltenham.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, lots of people did answer other. John Mead was one of them. He's a mighty Potter fan. Very impressive the last day and open to more improvement than the three main protagonists. It's still open to him to potentially run in the Ballymore. Where would you go if you were Gordon Elliott?
I'd say it depends on three-stripe life. I think he might split the two of those, maybe, possibly. Yeah, Mighty Potter is definitely overlooked. And I'd say one of Willie's maybe at a price is El Fabiolo.
Yeah, El Fabiolo. Yeah, okay. So that's the state of the Supreme and potentially the Ballymore. We need to talk about the Albert Bartlett. Sad news, Blazing Carl. Sad news for us anyway, because Blazing Carl is going to miss Cheltenham. Charles Burns reported that he'd had an injury. He's going to miss a couple of meets work. That means that it'll be too much of a rush to get to Cheltenham. So he's concentrating on Punchestown. So it's good news that we'll at least hopefully see him this season. That's produced a reordering of the Albert Bartlett market. And it's a very Gordon Elliott dominated affair with Ginto and Hollow Games towards the fore. And also Jerry Colomb. Now, we talked about him, Ruby. In fact, I talked about him with Danny, didn't I? About what the horse achieved over Christmas. What did you make of his latest performance at Thurles on Sunday?
Yeah, I thought the ground was probably on the dry. It was dry enough for Lydia and he did well enough. You had Churchstone Warrior riders by Jerry Colomb and the Gofford for them were kind of the main four in it. Look, he was put down at the seventh hurdle with Jack, was much better than at the eighth hurdle. But a slow jump at three out, which is not a good place to miss in Thurles, nearly cost him. But he got himself back up round the bend on the outside to the second last, where he took off out of Jock's hands and was always going to win from there home. Tough horse, who I thought showed his inexperience to beat more experienced rivals, and I think will step forward from it.
Yeah, I felt pretty positive about it. He's maintained his unbeaten record. The Albert Bartlett more often rewards experience than brilliance, although obviously brilliant horses have won it, like Minello Indo, Bobsworth. Where is Jerry Colomb equipped at this stage for that test, do you think?
He could be. I think it's quite important, like that the stats, the old stats, showed you that you needed a lot of experience, a lot of runs. But I think the caliber of horse has risen in recent years. That run in the Albert Bartlett, Minello Indo beating Alaho. Yeah, Monkfish, Noble Tyne, or Time Hill, sorry. There's been a couple of good renewals. So as the quality is rising, the experience requirement is dropping.
Really good point. Okay, so that are our thoughts about the novice hurdles.
So this week in Analyze This, I'm going to attempt to analyze Danny McMenamin's ride on Tommy's Oscar. And I thought this was a really good ride from a young man under plenty of pressure. The champion jockey, Brian Hughes, sets off on Navajo Pass and goes a really good gallop. The Navajo Pass won the race last year, but Danny just ignores him. And he has the confidence to think, well, they're going too fast. I'm not going to follow them. 34 miles an hour to the first. Same at the second hurdle. They're absolutely flying in front. But Tommy's Oscar is dropped in and he just stays going that speed. But when they pass the winning post, Brian Hughes has pulled Navajo Pass back. Keelan Woods is behind him on Global Citizen. But Danny doesn't panic, yet he will have realised that the two in front are slowing down to get a breather into the bend, into the back straight. Now they're going an even speed in front, but still Danny is in no rush to follow them. He doesn't think, oh, I have to get closer and rush Tommy's Oscar. He just stays riding at the same even fractions. And it's even more apparent away from the last hurdle in the back straight, because Brian Hughes sets sail into the bend, out of the back straight, and kicks a Navajo pass. But Danny McMenamin's body language never changes. Around into the third last, he's still not panicking, jumps that fine, and they're starting to tire in front, and he arrives running away at the second last hurdle. But then he doesn't set sail. He sits, stays behind Global Citizen, jumps the last, and goes away to win. It's textbook stuff, and it probably sounds very easy, but when you're 25 or 30 lengths behind someone like Brian Hughes, it's hard to resist the temptation to rush him down, and Danny McMenamin did. 10 out of 10 in my book.
And Tommy's Oscar is just a fabulous horse. He, Anne and Ian Hamilton are now seem to be resigned to going to the Univet Champion Hurdle. They sort of enlisted Niall Hannity to drive the box down there. and he's justified his place there. My concerns are their concerns. They've raised the undulating track. His best form seems to be on flat tracks, and he does adjust right. And we could just ask Goshen what that's like on the old course for the Champion Hurdle.
Yeah, he does. But I mean, I don't think he's going to adjust quite as right as Goshen is or does. But look, to be fair to Tommy's Oscar, he was third at Carlisle. Is that about the only undulating track he would have raced at behind Bass Rock? But I don't know. Maybe he is a flat track hero, but look, he's earned his right to run.
He really has. And you don't know unless you give it a go, do you? And he has absolutely earned his right to run. If we have a look at the betting, he is 25 to 1 behind, of course, Honeysuckle at 4 to 6. And Sam Felician's there at 33 to 1. Now, we had him wrongly headed towards Lingfield last weekend. Actually, we're going to see him at Nace this Sunday in the Limestone Lad. This is a horse you like. He's going to have to prove himself there, Ruby.
Yeah, I think he's a hard enough horse to place, did he? Because he's not a novice, yet he's still relatively young. And yeah, he's in Nace and the Limestone Lad on Sunday, which excludes horses that have won grade ones since the 1st of summer or date. But anyway, he gets in. I just think he could have the profile of a Martin Pipehorse, and this will be his third run. He won at Autoy in March of 2021. He won on his only start in Gorham, where he beat Slip of the Tongue. This will be his third start before the weights are out for the handicaps in Cheltenham. And I think as a five-year-old, not a novice, I think he takes Martin Pike box.
There are other key races run this weekend. We've mentioned several of them during the course of the show. One we haven't so far is the Cleve Hurdle. Champ is in that, facing the likes of Paisley Park and Lisnagar Oscar and McFabulous. And we'll be talking about that impact on the staying division in next week's show, as we will the outcome of today's Galmoy Hurdle. Again, that's going to be saved for next week. Other things that we'll be talking about next week, I would imagine, Ruby, is the Nace Novice Chase over 3 Mile 1 on Sunday. I imagine a few of those horses will be looking to qualify for the National Hunt Chase.
Yeah, look, it is obviously a condition of running in the race. So, yeah, there's a couple in there, Statler, etc., which ones are going to go now, I have no idea. But at least if you finish in the first three or four, Lydia, you can at least have the option of running in the National Hunt Chase. Fury Road's obviously qualified, so is Vanilla. But On Baton would need to qualify, and so would Noble Yates and Statler. They'd all need to qualify.
Okay, well, much to talk about next week. In the meantime, there's the column, which is racingtv.com/Road of Cheltenham. And I have an important message to impart to viewers, and that is that there won't be a Road to Cheltenham next Thursday. This time next week, you're going to have to entertain yourselves at 9 o'clock. That is because, Ruby, we're doing something else, aren't we?
Are we?
Yeah, we are. Saturday.
I know we were doing one on Saturday, but I assume we were doing two. So this is absolute music to my ears. We've a week off.
Start a week off, the preparation is the same. It's just shifted late. Anyway, so I'll tell you all and Ruby that there's going to be a live Road to Cheltenham after racing on Saturday night, live from the track at Leopardstown, halfway through the Dublin Racing Festival. We'll be reflecting on all the action from the week, the action from that first day, and looking ahead to the final day of two from that important festival. So remember, not next Thursday, but next Saturday. We'll see you there.
The home of jump racing. This is where the magic happens. Feel like a Cheltenham favourite with Paddy Power.